listening to nativetalk.net. Audio files are available online at nativetalk.net. Be a part of the program by emailing us, podcast@nativetalk.net. And now, your hosts, Cliff and Brandon, who include no saturated fats, no cholesterol, no chlorofluorocarbons, no smoking, alcohol-free, no artificial flavors or colors. Funny how with all that going for us, we're still bad for you. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good morning and thank you for joining us this morning on the NativeTalk.net radio program. It's just me today. Brandon is out, I don't know what he's doing. I think he's diving because that's just what he does. If you would like to chime in this morning with comments, the email is podcast@nativetalk.net. And I also have a phone number if you would like to call and leave a message, 970-278-5791. Now, today is going to be all about women because, of course, I'm pretty much an expert on women. Brandon had something to say about that. I told him what the subject was going to be before the show, and he says, yeah, Cliff, I can tell you're an expert on women. Make sure to mention that a lot because women absolutely love it when men tell them about themselves. Well, of course. I mean, after all, I've both met and spoken to women pretty much every day. And in fact, one time I remember I was hit in the ear by a shoe from a woman. So I'm pretty much as experienced as you can get, pretty much. Brandon says, I agree, buddy. I don't see how there could possibly be any more for you to learn. You should try teaching a course on women, given how much you know. Well, you know what? That's what we're doing this morning, is teaching a course on women. And that's why we're going to start this morning with makeup. Are you a woman who wears makeup? Do you like it? Or are you kind of the more natural type of a person? Which do you prefer? Well, it turns out, according to a new study led by Nancy Etcoff, which heads a team of Harvard University researchers, they are determined to show how makeup significantly alters how women and their character traits are perceived by others, both at first glance and over time. So in this study, they did actually two studies. They had 100 photos of 25 women's faces, okay? So you have the same women judged both without makeup and three different makeup looks. Because, you know, if you're a woman, you know that there's a thousand different ways to do your look, whether you do heavy eyeshadow or the rouge or the lipstick. You know, you can make yourself look a variety of different ways. So they had the same 25 women with three different looks and one without makeup. That makes up the 100 photos. The different looks were informally classified as natural, professional, and glamorous. Now, they didn't just concentrate on one age range. They had the women were aged between 20 to 50 and identified themselves as Hispanic, Caucasian, or African American. The results? They had people view them for 250 milliseconds, and women who wear makeup are not only seen by others as more likable, but also more attractive, more competent, and more trustworthy. And that did not matter depending on which makeup look they were wearing. All three different makeup looks increased the ratings of attractive, competence, and likability compared to the ratings of the same faces without makeup. Wow. I mean, who knew just a little bit of blush and lipstick had that kind of power? So, you know, it doesn't matter what type of makeup you're doing, as long as you're people view it, I think. This is my opinion now. They're not part of the study. But I think that people are viewing these women as trying to put their best foot forward and saying that they care about themselves. That's kind of what I'm thinking to explain why they classify people as more attractive and trustworthy, for goodness sakes, you know? So, I don't know. If you want to win that job interview or head it out on a date, definitely take the time to to make yourself up, according to Harvard University. And if you disagree, by all means, send me an email, podcast@nativetalk.net, and I'll forward it on to Harvard University, and you can let them know how you feel about their hate mail. I'm writing this letter because I want you to know how much I hate your stupid show. I don't actually have any hate mail, but that's just preemptive because I assume of what's coming, you know, based on my comments today. Oh, I forgot. I wanted to play our Women Pile theme song that I set up. That's all girls want to do, right? Just have fun, relax, do their makeup, curl their hair. I mean, that's women are basically just a one-trick pony, as far as I can tell. I'm really gonna get hate mail for this. All right, now we all know about women's intuition. You know how you get that feeling where you just know. And people try to convince you otherwise and say you don't really know, and you say I just have a feeling. Well, according to research, if you're a woman, your first instinct is more often right than it's wrong. Researchers at Duke Cornell and the University of Alberta say that your unconscious mind is actually much smarter than you think and can be a great motivator. According to Alberta School of Business researcher Sarah Moore, she looked at how our unconscious feelings about objects in our environment influence how we think and how we pursue goals. For instance, it's pretty easy to look at a bottle of water and say, hey, I want that water when you're thirsty, right? That's not intuition. But once you've had a drink, you don't see water the same way because now you've accomplished your goal of quenching your thirst. Now, when you're thinking about long-term goals, said Moore, we finish in small steps, we succeed, and we feel good about it. Now, that process makes us more likely to take the next small step towards achieving that goal. And your gut feelings help you determine which steps to take. Backing famed psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud's theories about the unconscious mind, says Moore, a lot of our decision-making and feelings are based on things that we're not fully aware of. So as you go through life, you've got things that are happening to you. Things that just that occur, and you're not 100% aware of them, but your unconscious mind kind of takes that stuff in, and it gives you these little feelings. Like, for example, if you've got a husband who's always working late and never answers the phone while he's working late, and he comes home with a slight smell of perfume, and he tells you, sweetie, there's nothing to worry about, but you've got a bad feeling, I'm thinking you're probably right. Or you know how a lot of times when, and this has happened to me, as a matter of fact, I've lived in a lot of different places. I grew up out in Sacramento, California. I moved to New Mexico for a year. I lived up in Utah for 5 years, Russia for 5 years, and I've been living in Fort Collins, Colorado for about the last five. And in each case, every time I had this just feeling before I left, that it was time to leave, that it was time to start looking for a new job, that it was time to start pursuing a new relationship. And there was never really a reason why I should feel that way, but I just knew when the right time was, and it's never let me down yet. So, you know, the good advice there is to trust your gut. All right, now, what about you women out there? Most of you, I mean, I understand that there's a lot of different relationship tastes, but right now, when you're a woman who's attracted to a man, what type of a voice are you attracted to? Are you attracted to
like that high-pitched, like a nerd voice? Hey guys, how you doing today?
Do you like the normal voice like me, or are you turned on by the deep baritone voice of Barry White? Well, If you are a woman who enjoys men with a baritone voice, beware, because men with low-pitched voices are well known to be more promiscuous. They don't really like to stick in relationships very much, but somehow they still manage to attract more women than men with higher pitched voices, which is probably why I didn't have that many girlfriends in high school. And they do this even though the women are fully aware that men with low voices are more likely to be unfaithful and probably aren't going to stick around very long. That is the word from Canadian researchers at McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario, who found that women are more attracted to men with low voices when it comes to short-term sexual relationships, because they understand that, hey, this isn't going to be like a long-term deal such as marriage. And they say that the sound of someone's voice actually affects how we think about them and behave towards them, explains the lead study author, Dr. Jillian O'Connor. Until now, it's been unclear why women would like the voices of men who are likely to cheat. But the more women thought these men would cheat, the more they were attracted to them for brief relationships when they're less worried about fidelity. So basically, if you're a type of a person who likes to go to bars, me, I have always struggled. I've never gotten any luck when I'm going to bars or parties and stuff, because it's the traditional place where women like to hook up. Never worked for me. My go-to place was always like church, youth groups, you know, volunteer type things, places where women were more likely to look for something long term because, you know, I mean, I grew up when I was younger, not growing up, but I'd always wanted to be in radio. And I've been in professional radio in a number of different markets. And yeah, I know my radio voice sucks, but I try my best. But I've always wished that I had that deep, you know, sexy voice, but maybe it's best I didn't, because yeah, maybe I wouldn't be married. I would just be one of these guys with a, you know, series of short-term deals, and I've never really enjoyed that kind of thing. Well, now it is the I'm recording this broadcast on the 29th, which means that Halloween is just around the corner. And so before we get to our piece on how 19th century women were taught to think about Native Americans, I want to do a couple of fun Halloween stories. Now, how many of you like to decorate for Halloween? I enjoy it, but honestly, I don't have like a ton of time to get out there and put up the scary spider webs and the you know, the skeleton and carve the pumpkin. I enjoy those things, but I got a busy life. I got three kids. One of them's just a little newborn. The others are like 6 and 2. So it seems like I'm going in all different directions. But I've never tried to do something really over the top, even when I have time and I do the Halloween decorations. But I know you've seen them. In every neighborhood, there's that neighbor who goes over the top, and it's always the same one, I'm sure you've seen, who they also do Christmas, they do Thanksgiving, they do, I don't know, what other holidays are there? 4th of July and stuff like that, where they just, I wonder where they save all of those items, because they always seem to just have tons of things. I wonder if they rent a storage unit just for their decorations. But, you know, they always do have the best Halloween stuff, because it's always something super scary. But for some in Ocean County, New Jersey, it's not a happy Halloween. There's a Halloween display in front of one home in Waretown that a lot of people like, but some people are complaining. Basically, it's a crime scene. Kevin Negrato and his family have put a ton of effort into creating an absolutely horrific fake crime scene, complete with a body pinned against a tree by a white car and blood dripping down it. Not everybody hates it, though. One neighbor, yeah, she doesn't use her last name because she's afraid of getting egged by the people who don't like it. She's identified only as Donna, says, "Hey, I think it's awesome. I really do. I don't know what the big problem is. I mean, it's just Halloween fun. but police have been inundated with calls from others who say that this display is absolutely inappropriate and goes too far because small children may see it. They say this display is in poor taste, while others say it looks like a drunk driving accident. Negrado says that he and his wife have been receiving nasty messages about what they consider a creative Halloween display for trick-or-treaters. Resident Justin Sarnowski says, "People are just being oversensitive about it. It's Halloween, people!" Negrado says he absolutely does not mean to offend anyone. Meanwhile, local police say they can issue a ticket for decorations, so they're free to decorate however they like. So, happy Halloween, guys. Speaking of that, do you guys give out candy? I just started the last couple of years, ever since we purchased and moved into this house. When I was younger, we got a lot of kids, but when I moved out, I always lived in, you know, apartment complexes and stuff like that. Nobody trick-or-treats at apartment complexes. But now that I live in an actual house again, we've been getting a good number of Halloween folks. But what kind of candies do you give out? Well, if you want to impress the neighborhood kids this Halloween, take a look at this list from Bon Appetit, who has ranked the top 10 best and worst Halloween candies of all time. So if you're at the store, and because I honestly haven't even gone candy shopping yet, I do plan to maybe later today or tomorrow so that I can have some stuff for Halloween. I'm sure all the good stuff will be gone, but, you know, we'll find out. But the good candies, if you've gone, you know, we've all been children, so we know. Hershey's Crackle. I love those crispy rice things. I like to suck on them, and the little rice just kind of pops in your mouth. I love that stuff. Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, Take Five, Pop Rocks. Okay, this isn't the 1980s. Well, they do say it's all time, but, you know, I don't know. I remember when I was a kid, I got Pop Rocks a few times, but I don't know if I'd rank that as the fourth best. Fifth, they say anything sour or hot. Blue Raspberry Blow Pops, very specific. I actually like the watermelon flavor a little bit better. Whoppers are good. Snickers is eighth. That's got to be closer to number one for me. And candy corn and anything full size. As far as the worst candies, you've got things like circus peanuts, raisins. Come on. Who buys raisins and gives them out at Halloween? That is just horrendously bad. Smarties. Whoa, you know what, though? I really like the big Smarties. You know the big Smarties? Those are good. You should give me some of those. You know, you can always mail me some. Necco wafers. Man, those things tasted like chalk. Werther's Original Candies. Only if you're about 400,000 years old would you want Werther's Originals. You get those a lot in the, you know, in the old folks' homes. Dum Dum Pops, yeah, that's what cheap businesses give out to the children's. Milk Duds, because they're horribly chewy, and Tootsie Rolls, come on, Tootsie Rolls? I mean, those are good, but like only one or two of them, and I have had enough. But when you go trick-or-treating, you always end up with like 400 Tootsie Rolls in there, and it just sick of them. So stick with the good candies. And your house will not be tricked, you hope. Unless you got a cute girl living there, and then probably the boys in the town who like her are going to, you know, attack your house anyway. Nothing you can do about that. I guess I'm going to have to worry about that about, 15 years from now. But, hey, at least I've got time. Anyway, we got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with how 19th century women were taught to think of Native Americans when we come back right here on the NativeTalk.net radio podcast.
Talk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon, bouncing 1.21 gigawatts of radio goodness off the newly repaired Hubble Space Telescope. Whoops. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Hi, this is Cliff.
And this is Brandon.
And this is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced. Whoa,
wait a minute. What?
What do you mean?
I'm pretty sure we're not the greatest podcast ever produced. I mean, have you heard of Serial?
No.
Cracked Podcast?
No.
Or Surprisingly Awesome?
No. Okay. The NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced that I have actually listened to. So visit us online.
online at nativetalk.net.
And tell your friends to download a few shows because, well, apparently we need it.
Yeah, if you ever want to measure up with podcasts that are actually good, like The Bugle with John Oliver or WTF with Mark Maron or...
In 1924, the United States granted citizenship to all Native Americans born in the U.S.
The right to vote, however, was governed by state law, and some of those states barred Native Americans from voting until 1957.
Today, American Indians, Alaska Natives, and Native Hawaiians are asserting themselves with political candidates, getting involved and understanding issues, and registering to vote.
Be part of the rising political clout of Native voters.
Let your voice be heard. Register to vote.
The NativeTalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon.
What radio wants to be when it grows up. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Welcome back to the NativeTalk.net radio program, available online always at NativeTalk.net, where you can download all of our past shows. You can also give us a phone call. 970-278-5791. If you would like to leave a recorded message, we can play that on the program as long as it's not profane. I got one of those, and we're not playing that one. So I'm also trying something new. I'm recording a Facebook Live post. So if you want to see me do the show, you can at go to Facebook. What is it? Facebook.com/Native Talk Radio. And I've got a Facebook Live video of this show. You can see it as I record it live. I don't know how it's going to work when I have Brandon on, because he's always too shy to show his face. But yeah, you can check out the video there. Facebook.com/Native Talk Radio. All right. Now, we know that the way people have thought about Native Americans has changed over the years. People used to think of natives as what? Savages, stupid, drunk, you know, I mean, just a litany of negative stereotypes. And that's one of the worst things that's always bothered me, how a native stereotype is always, it always seems to be bad. I mean, there's a few, like the noble brave or something like that, but they always call him what? The noble savage. You know, it's never in a good light. But what about the women? And we're not talking about modern times. We're going to go all the way back to the 19th century. That's the 1800s, for those of you who went to school in Rio Linda. Now, today's scholars have focused on what the 1800s stereotypes of indigenous Americans as brutal, sadistic. These are depictions that dominated press portrayals, and they still reverberate in our culture to this day. But when we look at those portrayals with an eye on gender, we see a slightly different story. Wait a second. I've got my you know, my go-to stereotype right here. Or this classic.
Teach 'em, pale face brother, all about red man.
You know, so that goes all the way back to the 1950s. But women, so they looked at the way women saw native women, right? And it suggests that they were portrayed as equal with their white sisters. So, you know, it wasn't all bad. I mean, unless you're a man. Women's magazines of the time proliferated during the 19th century. I mean, come on, what else were they going to do in the 1800s but read? Their husbands are off at work fighting the Civil War, or the War of 1812, you know, with England. So they're at home, keeping house, and what were they going to do? Women's magazines, directed exactly at them, kind of like today's Lifetime channel on cable. These publications often contained depictions of Native Americans that suggested a public fascination with these people that were believed to have vanished from public scrutiny. Because remember, after the big, French and Indian War and the newspaper stuff and the Indian quote-unquote savages attacking the forts and things, once they were, you know, quote, conquered, they were all just kind of shoved to the side, forced to assimilate, and basically forgotten. And so they were kind of looked at through whatever prism they wanted to. The captivity narratives, that was always a popular one. You know, the damsel in distress. And so they would tell these stories about women who were captured by evil men and rescued, and domestic love stories. These magazines also experimented with a stereotype of the Indian woman that was absolutely opposite the one that seemed to have been assigned to men. Native American women's moral natures were celebrated in these stories of their self-sacrifice and their submission to their husbands and lovers, and their beauty was described at length. Now, how do you think that beauty was described? Do you think it was accurate? Nope. They were depicted as attractive, desirable, and of course pious. Their moral natures were celebrated in self-sacrifice. Their beauty was one that matched 19th century beauty ideals for white women. Light skin, carefully groomed hair, thin and shapely body, dressed in popular colors. In other words, absolute fiction. The writers focused on physical attributes that linked white folks and Native American women together rather than their heritage. The Native women that the white women encountered in women's magazines were, in a sense, white women. So, in other words, they would tell these stories. I mean, think Pocahontas. How accurate do you think that story was, especially the Disney-fied version? I realize that it was loosely based on true events, but if you watch the Disney version of Pocahontas, I mean, that's exactly what it is. I mean, she's a Native American woman, but she's basically white the way they depict her. This fictitious Native American woman was also, of course, morally upstanding. Narratives focused on her superior housekeeping, right, because Native American women were sweeping out the old teepee or the longhouse. She had a fierce devotion to children, and she was full of piety and self-sacrifice. But the question is, how did she gain these virtues? There are two conflicting theories on this. Speculation that Native American women learned their values from their natural surroundings, and another was that they were transmitted through contact with missionaries and white settlers. Of course, you can't learn good moral values unless you've been taught them by white settlers. Well, I mean, these people were just... Even when you give them a fictional account, you can't give them any credit. In the meantime, Native American men were portrayed as violent, ruthless, cruel, and reflected the 19th century sexual, racial, and colonial fears. In other words, the Indians are going to attack. Hence the phrase that we still use today, hold down the fort. Portrayals reflected popular values by suggesting that ruthless Native American men could only be tamed by civilization and the tempering influence of a woman. There you go, because you can't possibly have a good man who isn't affected by a woman. That is just absolutely ridiculous. Apologize for the sound of the baby. But speaking of women, my wife is out having a good time, so I'm taking care of the little ones these days. So, yeah, there we go with that. Now, it looks like the way that these women were portrayed seems like a positive thing, but is it? Is that really good to be depicting these women in this way? Clemens, who writes about this, she says that even though they had a good light shown upon them, it actually ended up hurting Native Americans far more than it helped. Because when you compare white women and Native Americans, white Americans were justified in their forced assimilation. There's a great book I read called entitled, they called it Prairie Light, about the Native American schools, that a boarding school that the natives were forced to visit and go to. And it was designed to save the man, but kill the Indian. And they were, and when they read these stories about what good, great people they are when they adopt white ways, it's basically showing them that that's a good thing. And believe it or not, these ideas persist even in today's society, and people just they don't find the desire to go out there and find out what's real and true. I have recently myself been reading and looking into my own culture, and it saddens me that it's so hard to find. When I read about natives, you get all the big tribes, but I'm a member of the Puyallup tribe of Indians, and our history just isn't out there that much. Fortunately, our tribe did put out a book called, you know, surprisingly enough, The History of the Puyallups. So that's where I get my information. And I plan to do kind of like a little way of life history series coming up soon. We got Ron, you know, he's a member of the Chippewa Nation, and he's putting together an interesting history of the way his tribe lived as well. So, you know, this is where I ask you for help, because if you have any stories about your tribe, things that you know, things that you've learned, email those in, podcast@nativetalk.net, because I would love to hear, you know, Indian legends from your particular tribe, some of the history, some of the stories, some of the things that that happened in the past, you know, the true stuff, not the fictionalized versions. So, yep, send those in if you have them. In the meantime, hope you enjoyed the show today. That will do it for us on the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. We'll be back next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio, available online at NativeTalk.net. We hope you will share the show with your friends. Send them to our website, possibly give us a call, 970-278-5791, and leave us your comments, and subscribe to the YouTube channel, or, of course, our Facebook page, where you can see video of us doing the show live. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a great week. See you guys next time.
You're listening to NativeTalk.net. No promises, no boasting, just a bunch of people having fun. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.